Chapter 10. Suspicion. Storm ghosts. Kill space immersion.
Why are you here?
Cord kept his eyes steady on the questioner. She had identified herself as Brigadier Elite Susubaka, and the chromed pins of her uniform echoed that claim. Her face was as lean as it was hard, narrowing from cropped dark hair to a pointed chin, by way of dark eyes and a thin mouth. He had spent most of his life in and around the men and women who fought the Emperor's wars and defended his conquests. He had seen officers, soldiers, and warriors of every stripe, and felt he could judge the nature of another in a few minutes. It had not taken that long with Brigadier Elite Susubaka. He had her typed as soon as she had stepped through his cell door. Hard, clever, not to be underestimated. Cord let out a breath and brought his hands up to run them across his mouth. The chains rattled from the manacles circling his wrists. The cell was small, a single cot crammed into a box of rockcrete and sealed behind a heavy plasteel door. It had been... He was not sure how long it had been since he had climbed from War Anvil to a waiting circle of gun muzzles. They had fed him and let him sleep before starting this. At least for that he was relieved, if not grateful. He looked up at the Brigadier, whose eyes were steady on his face. Minutius stood just behind her. The Iron Hand's armor filled the cramped space with a buzz like active engines and electricity. He had said nothing since the pair had entered, but just watched and listened. Of the two, Cord found the Space Marine's silence and stillness by far the most disturbing. He looked back at Susubaka.
We were attacked somewhere to the south. We lost most of...
I did not ask how you are here. I asked why.
We were not an extended patrol.
You are Colonel Silas Cord, commander of the Reborn 71st, latterly of the 71st Talon?
Her expression added the words mongrel and scrap regiment without her needing to say them.
Operating out of the Crescent Shelter Complex?
Yes, he said.
Then why, Colonel, are you nearly 1,000 kilometres from the Crescent Shelter? And why were your units recorded as lost over 8 weeks ago?
She said the words softly, stepping forward so that she could lean down to speak to him close to his face.
The Talon 71st was deployed on a standard extended sweep patrol. It should have been back under Earth and all of its crew tucked up 48 hours later. But none of them came back. No signals received, nothing. Another patrol found the wreck of an executioner from the 71st a week later. I had to monopolize some of our very limited signal capacity to confirm this. So that leads us back to the question of why you are here.
She kept her head close to him, as if waiting to catch a whisper. Cord said nothing for a moment. He remembered the crow call, pealing away from them when he had given the choice of following or returning to the shelter. So, none of them lived, not even those who had refused to follow him. He refocused his thoughts on the present. The Brigadier wanted answers. He could not fault that need, even if he did not like her. The truth, though, was something that he was sure would not help take the chains from his wrists.
We strayed, of course. Couldn't find our way back. Then we got hit, and we headed here because we heard there was a shelter.
A shelter?
She stood up, the disbelief in her voice and on her face too sharp to be feigned.
You know what this is, don't you?
He shrugged and glanced back at Manetius. The Space Marine did not seem to respond.
It is the Ratchap, the buried mountain, stronghold of the Governor Militant, and the last place that a missing unit from the surface should stumble over. If we lose this battle, this will be the last place to fall. Making sure of that is my duty. 6 days ago, the Governor Militant was assassinated out in the world above by people who were supposed to be above suspicion. So you see, Colonel Cord.
She crouched down and leaned back in so that he could smell the recaf on her breath.
I do not like nomads stumbling onto our doorstep with lies on their tongues.
We simply came for shelter.
She smiled, a crooked slash of teeth under her gun barrel eyes.
I spoke to a colonel on the Crescent Command staff, a man called Fask. The only reason he could plausibly think for someone called Cord being this far off his mark was if he were chasing some theory about a ghost patrol and patterns of enemy action. He said that if that was what had brought Cord here and cost him all but two machines of his command, that it would be kind to shoot him now.
She folded the smile back into a hard line.
But that is only if you are who you say you are, and not something else. Either way, I do not like your answers.
Cord dipped his head, took a breath and rubbed his thumbs against his eyelids. Coloured smudges bloomed in the brief blackness. When he looked up, Sussa Barker was looking down at him, expectation held in her stare.
"We were attacked to the south," he said.
The brigadier let out a sigh and gave a small shake of her head, then turned and rapped on the door. It opened, and Cord saw the guard standing on the other side of the threshold. The brigadier took a step through, turned and looked back at Cord.
"I do not need to hear the truth, even if you decide to tell it to me," she said. "Whether you are a spy or just a renegade, the answer will be the same. You will have time to think about that. All the time there is, in fact."
She stepped out of the cell. A moment later, Manicius followed. Just before the door sealed again, Cord saw the Iron Hand look back at him, a look that he could not begin to read in the flint-grey eyes.
"Arm," he commanded.
The guns of the Silaros armed. Herend felt it as soon as he said it, a hot blurred feeling spreading through him. For an eye blink, he thought he felt the rounds snap into breaches, the charges into focus chambers, in every weapon, in every remaining machine. He tried to ignore the feeling. They spread out slowly. Herend walked forward. Sand and dust rattled against his iron skin. Above him, the dust storm rose from the dun-coloured ground to the azure sky. Seen with clear sight, it was a rolling cliff the colour of rust and snow. Flashes of lightning scored through its core. Herend could feel the charge within it itching his senses.
"You see them?"
he asked.
"Yes," Yarvak replied.
The dust and scoured rocks shifted like snow beneath his tread. The wind was rising. Snakes of dust were sliding across the ground. He kept his gaze on the storm wall. His weapons were ready. They had been ready from the moment he had seen the ghosts in the storm. At first he had thought they were simply shadows in the storm, scattered images created by the churning dust. Then one had briefly solidified into the shape of a tank, its silhouette swallowed as soon as it had appeared. Then he had seen more, each one a different size and in a different place, but every time he saw them they were closer.
"I have no sensor readings. We should fire."
"Hold!"
He spoke the word as much for himself as the others. His world narrowed to the threat markers tracking the oncoming shapes. His weapon systems felt warm. He shifted. The fingers of his fists clacked shut and opened. He did not register the movement. The guns that were part of him were aching.
"Hold!"
he said again.
"Well, it could be an entire army group,"
said a voice he could not identify. It did not matter. All that mattered was the building pain around the muzzles of his guns.
"Well, all the more reason not to shoot."
That was Yarvak. At least he thought. He forced a thought to form in his mind.
"Signal them,"
he growled.
"Unknown units, identify yourselves."
The ghost shapes grew in the rolling wall of dust, shapes hardening into hulls of war machines, into gun barrels and tracks.
"Do we fire?"
"Hold!"
The heat was bleeding through him.
"Do we fire?"
"Fire! Fire! Fire!"
The word echoed and rolled through him, like a drumbeat, like a heartbeat that had become his.
"Fire!"
The metal of his bones was aching. There was lightning under his skin. He was nothing. He was half a being, an empty skin hung like a banner in a dry wind.
"Fire! We only live in fire!"
and above him a black sun hung in the half-dream of his thoughts, scattering light that cast no shadow. It grew, swelling and bloating, and he had to fire, had to allow the shadow of destruction to become part of the world. The black sun swallowed him, and he was standing before the memory of Perturabo.
You will be given a guide to lead you, and your Cardo will go with you, but you will be alone.
The hard edge had returned to Perturabo's voice, and his eyes had seemed to sink back into the stillness of his face.
There are eyes within our allies that watch us and look for weakness in us. They are all around us, never blinking, never sleeping.
The Primarch turned and began to move away as one of the Iron Circle moved to enclose him.
They cannot know of this. Even those that go with you should know only what they need. No other, even those within the Legion, may know what you do for me.
I will find it, my master.
Others looked. Others failed.
I will not fail.
Unknown units, identify yourselves.
Yarvak's challenge rang across the Vox. The image of his father was gone. The black sun was gone. He felt nothing, the embrace of his metal body cold without sensation. For an instant he felt loss. The dust wind was streaking past, swallowing the edges of everything in sight. The cliff face of the storm was above, its crest flickering with dry lightning. The ghosts advancing with the storm were no longer ghosts. They were war machines of the Legiones Astartes. Three machines rolled forward as though riding with the wind, a Venator, a Sycharan, and the slope-fronted slab of a Land Raider. Their armor was metallic blue, the edges of their armor plates rubbed to bright metal. Etched serpents reared across their plates. Numerals and archaic letters ran in neat rows down white bands painted along their flanks. Herend did not recognize the unit markings, or even the organizational structure they conformed to. But he recognized who they were. They were scions of the Lastborn, Alpha Legion. The three Alpha Legion vehicles halted. Herend switched to infrasight in time to see that their weapons were hot, held at full charge.
Harrow Group Arcadis, 20th Legion.
The voice came over the Vox, filled with a pop and snarl of distortion.
We see you, brothers.
Signal identifiers confirm, said Yarvak.
Herend said nothing, watching as heat bled into the surrounding air from the Alpha Legion tanks. The wind gusted, and the ochre swirl of dust enveloped them. The sky above was gone, and with it the sun.
How are you here?
He asked at last.
Well, may I not ask the same question first, Ancient? Came the reply, the voice smooth and confident.
I am not of the Ancients, he replied.
Well, my apologies. I am Thetacron. Who do I address?
How are you here? He repeated.
Hestal's sight had guided them on through desolation after the Battle of the Pass. They had not seen even the signs of the dead for a very long time. In his sight, the targeting runes blinked between red and amber above the three Alpha Legion machines, the words of Perturabo rising from memory.
There are eyes within our allies that watch us and look for weakness in us. They are all around us, never blinking, never sleeping.
We hit an enemy patrol on the other side of this depression, said the voice, which had named itself Thetacron.
Casual arrogance dripped from his tones.
We are moving back across towards a hold position. You move with the storm?
Asked Yarvak.
We are the storm.
Herend pivoted his head. Data from his sensors flickered as they tried to claw detail from the swirl of charged dust.
You can navigate through it.
Of course,
Thetacron replied, paused, then carried on.
From the damage I can see on your machines, you must have taken casualties. We also are below strength. Where are you bound?
The line of lightning cracked above them, turning the ochre swirl to sheet white. Herend could feel the tension in the situation itching against his instincts.
South,
he said. With the Stormwind, said Thetacron. We share a path. We will join with you.
Master, Yarvak's voice cut through the vox, low, insistent.
If you wish to keep moving through the storm, we can guide you.
The moment lengthened, and the wind tugged sheets of dust across them.
That is acceptable, he said.
Master. Good, said Thetacron. You are the greater strength. You have our command. Who is it that we have the honour of following?
I am Herend, he said.
Argonus's prison was a cube of plasteel, without seam or rivet. He had entered through a single door as thick as tank armour, and had heard a cascade of locks turn when it closed. Air seeped in and out from holes around the door no wider than a child's finger. They had taken his armour, of course, and left him with a robe of grey fabric. Water and nutrition paste came through tubes mounted on the door, though he could have lived without both for many months. The door had remained shut since he had entered, and he had no reason to suppose that it would open again. They were watching him, though. A picked lens and sensor blister sat behind a crystal dome at the centre of the ceiling. He supposed that this state of isolation might have caused panic, or the mind to begin to eat itself with uncontrolled emotion. For Argonus, his mind became focused, his emotions stilled. The mysteries that had made him allowed no other response. He had failed, but while that weighed on his thoughts, it was secondary. First and foremost, he had to plan, had to find a way of turning this situation. That there was hope of doing so did not matter. Hope was one thing that he did not need to live. They had not killed him. Deceiving the War Master was one thing. Killing his emissary was another. The fact that they had resisted crossing that line implied that this was not treachery in the simple sense. If Perturabo had intended to move against Horus in the future, killing his representative would have been a simple thing. Holding him prisoner held more risk, but also opened the implication that Perturabo wanted to keep what he was doing secret from the War Master now. There were many possibilities as to why that might be, but one stood out more clearly than all the rest, as Argonis considered them.
They have not succeeded in whatever their true purpose on Talarn is, and if the War Master knew that purpose, he might stop them before it was complete.
What that purpose was remained unknown. A shape suggested by the few details that Sota Nul had told him before they were taken. Black Oculus, ghost patrols, path seekers. The words resonated with implication but without clear conclusion. He thought of the words that Malaghurst had spoken to him before he had left the vengeful spirit. Horus had not been present, but his throne, with its empty chair, had loomed in Argonus's awareness, as though his gene father had been sitting there, silent, his eyes turned away in reproach.
"Find out what they are doing,"
Malaghurst had said, looking down at him from beside the empty throne.
"Cannot we just ask?"
Argonus had kept his voice respectful, but he had pointedly not bowed his head to the equerry. He might speak for the Primarch, but he was not Horus, and Argonus had been one of Abaddon's chieftains for more than enough time to find making obeisance to Malaghurst a line that he would not cross, even now.
"We can ask, but there are answers and answers."
"And the Lord of Iron has always been stalwart in his backing for the War Master?"
"He has. But we live in times when presumption is as dangerous as cowardice."
Malaghurst left the word hanging at the tail of his words. Argonis felt the muscles tick in his jaws.
"Besides, this engagement of his is sucking in and spending forces at a rate which must be justified. It is a hungry battle he is fighting, and we are fighting a war in which we cannot let such strength be spent blindly."
"What do you suspect?"
"Suspect?"
A rattling smile had been in that word.
"I suspect nothing. I fear everything. That is my great virtue. Find out what they are doing there and why."
"If the reason is simple."
"Then impress on them that this battle cannot last for all time."
Argonis had wanted to shake his head. It was not that he was being sent on a mission that was so clearly a punishment concealed in an honour. It was that it felt dirty, tainted by subterfuge. After all that had happened, all the bonds of brotherhood severed, and all the blood on all their hands, such a sense, perhaps, should not have mattered to him. It did matter to him, though. It mattered a great deal. Malachurst had watched him with wet, pale eyes, while the instincts of honour and obedience warred behind Argonis's face. "And this is the War Master's will?" he asked at last.
"To the letter and word."
"And if there is something else, some reason that is not simple?"
"Bring them to heel," said Malachurst.
Argonis had been able to hide the disbelief on his face. How was he supposed to bring a system-killing force led by a Primarch to heel? Malachurst had heard both the disbelief and the question in Argonis's silence, and his eyes had sparkled cold as he raised a hand and a pair of figures had drifted from the shadows. They had come to a halt beside Malachurst, a black-robed spectre and a green-robed man with a head locked in iron. Malachurst had raised his other hand. Between his armoured fingers he held a key with twisted teeth.
"You will not go alone," he had said.
Argonis thought of the key, taken along with his weapons and armour. So to Nul and Propheus too, taken and imprisoned, or so he presumed. He would need them both, if he was to complete the mission his Primarch had given him. It was not in his nature to accept the possibility of failure, but as the time had passed in the cell, he had felt its presence growing in his awareness.
"This is a chance, Argonis," Malachurst had said, as he had handed him the standard of the Eye of Horus. "A chance for forgiveness, or oblivion. Which will it be?"
Io blinked. It was the closest she came to rest now.
Rest? What even was that?
She had suppressed so many of the physical elements of severe fatigue that both exhaustion and rest existed only as concepts, terms to apply or not. She was fairly sure that the taste of blood in her mouth related to the presence of one and the absence of the other, but she was not going to examine that data. She could not rest, not now. She barely moved except to shift location, and she had taken the risk of not doing that several times now. There was just too much to process, too many lines of manipulation, of observed effect and recalculation. She could not step away from it for even a second. Half of the battlescape of Talon breathed in and out of her subconscious. She had taps into the Iron Warrior's communications, into the Alpha Legion's communications. She saw her enemies, and they did not see her. She had even retasked a portion of the Iron Warrior's communication system to leech data and signals from the Loyalists. It was the finest data harvest she had created. With a blink, she could see the operative called Yelen. With another blink, she could read the reports of Yelen's operatives. There were holes, true, but what was art without imperfection? She had heard that once, she was sure, but she could not remember where. She had suppressed a lot of extraneous memories recently. It didn't matter. The point still stood. It was beautiful. A few simple, bare facts. A mission sent here, a location signal there, a report here, all circling ignorance like water draining into a hole. Fear and defiance and hope. People were supposed to be unpredictable, but they were not. They really were not. If you could see what they knew, their responses became like the directions of ships under sail. Something wet rolled down from her nose in the physical world she was ignoring. It touched her lips. It tasted the same as the blood already in her mouth. She had been wrong. Not wrong in her calculations, but wrong in her mission objective. It had been too narrow, too direct, too tame. The possibility she had sensed when Argonis and his witch discovered the black Oculus Navigators was no longer a possibility. It was the primary target, and it was achievable. The calculations confirmed it. She wondered if any being on the system knew the truth besides her. Perturabo, of course, but even he did not see as she did. Not now. This was her battle now. Her song. She narrowed her awareness, focusing down on a few spurs of possibility. It just needed a shift, a little panic, a little desperation. And there, shining like a silver fish cutting through dark water, was a beginning. It was a simple signal. The layers of ciphers encoding it had baffled the Iron Warriors, but Io had broken it by simply taking the key encoding from the Alpha Legion. Iron Warriors sweep force under command of Herond moving north towards Media Depression. A location code was embedded with the words. She smiled, and the movement nudged a bead of still liquid blood onto her tongue. The signal had yet to reach the Alpha Legion, and now it never would. She formed the signal which would, slowly taking her time over each phrase. Iron Warriors sweep force under command of Herond lost. Advise use of Imperial assets to intercept. Strong indications that they are closing the artifact. Advise use of all means to isolate and terminate this force. She paused after she composed the signal. It would be the last to come from the force trailing Herend and his machines. Even if they sent more, they would never be heard. This was it, their last word. She nodded to herself and loosed the signal. She would have to shift location soon. She could see Yelan now, could predict him and his attempts to shut her down, but part of her still remembered that she needed to be alive to function. She would move. She would, but not yet. She wanted to watch for a little longer.